Good morning on Friday morning. We're with our political observer, Alan Sharth. There's so much news today. Let's get right to it. The headline, Israel and United Arab Emirates announce a major diplomatic agreement. Israel will suspend plans to annex disputed West Bank territory as part of a deal to normalize relations with the United Arab Emirates. The surprise statement from the White House said that the two countries would sign a string of agreements on investment, tourism, security, and other areas. Your reaction to this deal?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of geopolitics that's involved in this, David. We know that the White House is desperately looking for a win, and the idea that they have to back off, as does Netanyahu, for expanding the West Bank settlements has been known to a lot of people. It's the one thing that sticks in everybody's craw. So what's happened is that Netanyahu pulls back. But he needs a reason for pulling back. He needs an excuse, and the excuse is a substantial one. We, a big part of the Arab community, will basically make friends with you if you do this thing. And so everybody would seem to be happy. It'll be interpreted, of course, as a win for the president, at least by the president, but his credibility is so shot these days that nobody really listens to a lot of what he says and takes it all that seriously. When I say nobody, it's been pointed out to me that there's still a third of the country that does. So it is a major piece of news, and I think it's a piece of good news.
How about this news? Again, Trump promotes false claim that Kamala Harris might not be a U.S. citizen. He did that with Obama.
This is called the big lie. You say it over and over again. Look, there are people alive who believe in the kinds of conspiracies that we've seen that involves the murder of their children. I'm not saying that this is his, but he has been playing footsie with some of those people. That's the president, of course. He tells the big lie. He just says it over and over again. She was born in the United States. She's eligible to be president. That's the end of it. But as he did with Obama, he'll just keep saying it because he thinks that it's good red meat for the base.
So what do you make of this, Alan? Trump admits he's blocking postal cash to stop mail-in votes. The president frankly acknowledged Thursday, says the AP, that he's starving the U.S. Postal Service out of money in order to make it harder to process an expected surge of mail-in ballots, which he worries would cost him the election. On Fox Business Network, Trump explicitly noted two funding provisions that Democrats are seeking in a relief package that has stalled on Capitol Hill. Without the additional money, he said, the Postal Service won't have the resources to handle a flood of ballots from voters who are seeking to avoid polling places during the pandemic.
David, that is something we've known for quite a while. We've known that that's where he's going. The fact that he's so stupid that he admits it. Well, maybe not stupid. Maybe what he does is he says, okay, I need that base and I need them to come out in full force. And I'm going to talk about grabbing women by the crotch. And it hasn't seemed to hurt me, even though, you know, if a Democrat ever did that, there would be a universal outcry. But he keeps on doing these things. And the base will support him to a large degree. And nobody moves off the dime because this election is all about racism, and we all know it. In any case, this is a defined play out of the Trump playbook, and it will continue.
The recession ends for the rich while enduring for everyone else, says the New York Times. Jobs are fully back for the highest wage earners, but fewer than half the jobs lost this spring have returned for those making less than $20 an hour. That's according to a new labor data analysis.
David, it's always been so. The poor are the first to get hurt, and they are the last to get, let us coin a new word, unhurt. This is predictable, and it is one of the things that is so troubling about American society, the difference between the haves and the have-nots, the people who are more fortunate and the people who really are in terrible shape, up to and including putting food on the table. It is awful, and the fact is it keeps getting worse.
Well, some history is being written right now by a number of former Trump associates and confidants, including Michael Cohen, his personal attorney. Did you see this foreword he wrote from Otisville Prison on March 11th, 2020? It begins like this. The president of the United States wanted me dead. Or, let me say it the way Donald Trump would. He wouldn't mind if I was dead. That was how Trump talked, like a mob boss using language carefully calibrated to convey his desires and demands, while at the same time employing deliberate indirection to insulate himself and avoid actually ordering a hit on his former personal attorney, confidant, consigliere, and at least in my heart, adopted son. He goes on to talk about how he threatened his family. He got many, many death threats. He said, this is a book the president of the United States does not want you to read.
That's right, and nor are we going to be able to read it for a while. We got just just a little tiny taste of it, the forward. Remember, this is the fixer. This is the confidant. And he was there in the time Trump was in office for those early years. And he has the goods. Whether we will hear specifically, they've tried to shut him up. But, you know, it's going to be very hard. Look, Trump has this thing going for him, which just has to be changed in America, which is that a president cannot be held criminally responsible while he's president. I've often said, you know, so he kills somebody before you and you can't indict him? That's absurd. And we are in a place in this country where that has to be corrected. And I have a feeling that this book is going to go a long way towards the impetus to make it so that we will change the rule that somebody created in the Justice Department. No man is above the law. The Supreme Court recently said it, but then they pulled in their behinds and they said, okay, now go back to the lower courts and discuss this after November.
I'm seeing these two stories side by side in New York. Empty apartments in Manhattan reach record high, topping 13,000. Catskills Town, we're talking about Kingston, New York, leads U.S. in rising home prices with New York City exodus. They've seen an 18% jump from a year earlier, and we're hearing about all the way up the Hudson Valley, homes being snatched up by city dwellers.
And then over to the east, where I live in Great Barrington, I have to tell you, the complaint on the part of the real estate people, or some of them anyway, is not enough inventory. Now, there are some homes which are outrageously priced, and people get greedy, but for the most part, these homes are going like hotcakes, and we know why. People don't want to be where a lot of other people are, because that increases your chances of getting this disease.
Our political observer, Alan Chartok.